Yo, Joes and Agents of Cobra Command, you are listening to episode 321. Nay. Fucking hell. Let's do that again. Yo, Joes and Agents of Cobra Command, you're listening to episode 320 of G.I. Joburg. My name is Steve. I'm joined by Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello. How's it, Bookforce? How's it, Steve?
And Rob.
Oh. Hey, guys. Hello. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good night. Hey, it's a good Friday for South Africans. It's a normal Saturday for Steven.
We're recording it? This show. Yes, it's still Good Friday for me as well. It's just gone 10:30 in Australia, Brisbane time. It's just after 2:30 for you guys in Africa. Mm-hmm. But you will be listening to this on perhaps Easter Monday or Sunday if you're living in the past. Or sometime in the future. Because this is
Ferrari!
This is one of our pre-recorded episodes where we focus in on a specific toy that the three of us all possess and have some special connection to. And for the first time ever, we're not focusing on a vehicle toy. We are going to do Snake Eyes. Of course.
Yeah, Snake Eyes.
The first action figure focus of this series had to be the Man in Black himself, but perhaps not the version that you would most likely find people beating their drums and throwing ticker tape and bringing out the marching band for. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is the 1989 version of Snake Eyes we're going to be cracking on in this episode.
Whoa.
Giving ratings about and discussing his nitty-gritty, his greeblies, his eccentricities. And I think the most important question to ask you both, why 1989 Snake Eyes? Why?
He was the only one we got. Didn't we have any choice?
Rob nailed, yeah, but Rob did kind of nail it. I mean, yes, we did get 85 Snake Eyes. But this bad boy over here, this was Snake Eyes as a lot of us knew him. Like in the schoolyard and everything. I only knew about the other Snake Eyes much later on in my life when I was 8 years old. But this was the one that you could find everywhere when we were little. When we were too stupid to appreciate how awesome this was.
Well, I appreciate him from the start, from the very start. You know, he's my absolute favorite figure. Like, you can tell I played with him a lot. His legs are like wibbly wobbly. His right arm kind of does a thing as well. He likes, no solution.
Rob invented ninja action, bro.
Hell yeah. Absolutely, one of my absolute favorite figures. Just could not stop playing with this guy. He just looks awesome, you know. And it's the magic.
Your mother got you Scoop because he was the most non-violent-looking G.I. Joe figure on the card. He had a camera as his primary accessory.
Exactly.
Snake Eyes came with nothing but instruments for dealing death. How did you spin that one?
I don't know. I think he just looked cool. My mom just accepted that he was the coolest-looking figure on the shelf. Which is, I think, has always been the case. You know, he's the standout. He's I wouldn't say plain, but you know, he's just like he's a very straightforward design, which I think is obviously what worked out in the favor of the original Snake Eyes as well. Like he stood out because he was this uniquely badass looking figure on the shelf, and that's why we've always gravitated towards Snake Eyes. And it doesn't matter which Snake Eyes version it is, well, maybe the fourth version, but you know, obviously the earlier ones, like he would be the standout figure on the shelf. And, you know, she was like, okay, he looks
and
cool.
Somewhat of like a schoolyard status symbol.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
If you had Snake Eyes, you were the coolest mofo in the school. Like, I mean, at least for that play session. Everyone else had to settle for Recoil or, you know, sort of another
sci-fi. Ooh.
Another really
downtown.
Just a face in the crowd. Another Green Army man. If you had Snake Eyes, you had the man.
You were the coolest guy. Ever in
For
the
me,
world.
The story started, at least with this version of Snake Eyes, in the Christmas of 1990.
Whoa.
A I just turned six. Yeah. So 6 year old Steve, Christmas morning, gets carded 1989 Snake Eyes. And I've told the story a couple of times, and I can't really claim that I have clear memories of the time, because I think I've kind of told the story that maybe we invited friends over and the friend was like, this is the coolest action figure you've got. I'm going to make him mine. And so it sailed off into someone's pocket. But I don't know if that's the truth. Might have just been making up a fun story.
Maybe from that picture you showed, it looked like it was actually your sister's toy. So maybe she kept it.
Maybe. I should ask you, Tess. I just played with it so much during that particular summer holiday that it disappeared into the playgrounds and parks of those heady days of the early 90s. I don't have any memories of it beyond that Christmas season. I guess I loved it intensely, but it
too much. And then, when you met me, I had one and you were like, oh, it's so cool.
There you go. So once you came into my life, Rob, I only kept you around because you gave me access to that Snake Eyes I so beloved.
I know, exactly. I knew it. I knew that was the reason.
But it turns out like this toy does come with like a few horror stories, and I feel like this is the episode to at least chronicle that, because I know I've mentioned this in future episodes or future episodes, past episodes of the podcast. So I remember getting this figure. I remember taking him off the shelf, and I remember assembling the trisectional staff. I don't know why I remember that, but anyway, I do. And then fast forward a few, like maybe a year, maybe 2 years, I don't know. This figure was with like a lot of other G.I. Joes that I had, and a friend of mine came over to my house. His name's Enrico, you bastard. And I thought, well, you know what? This kid, I mean, he was a bit of an awkward dude and whatever. And I thought, okay, well, I'll let him play with like Snake Eyes because I love this toy. And I thought it'll be fine. And this little shit managed to somehow pull him apart, that his O-ring was broken. And at the time, I was like, I'm kind of annoyed by that. But I remember collecting the parts and keeping them safe in the hopes that one day I could maybe find a replacement O-ring or something like that to fix it with. And then over time, the parts just went missing, man. Like the weapons and everything. I think the only thing I had left of this guy was actually his upper torso, which then, when I met David also had this guy. And it was like so cool to be reunited with this Snake Eyes figure and to really, really appreciate this toy again. It kind of made me really, really regret what had happened to my original. Then as things went on with the customizing stuff, I donated that upper body, that upper torso to Dave, because he then repurposed it and used it for some custom character. I think he did like a red Snake Eyes or something out of this. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting thing, this toy. Like, I find there's a lot of horror stories with Snake Eyes. If I speak to other people I know with G.I. Joe, they often bring up the word Snake Eyes. They're like, I had a Snake Eyes figure and then the dog got it. Or we were playing and we were throwing them on the roof or something stupid. It's some ridiculous crap that people do today, Snake Eyes figures. But well,
chances were always good that when you were picking your team between you and your friends, someone was bound to take Snake Eyes as their primary. So the figure was always going to see action every single time, no matter what the mission, no matter what the weather, no matter what the setting. Snake Eyes always came out of the toy box. So in terms of the actual history of the plastic in our hands, Rob, you've got your childhood one.
Yeah,
bravo!
Original number one.
He survived. Paul, where's yours from? Because mine is from South Africa as well. This was bought at a local seller. Withers Amusements. Mine,
I believe
back
I
in time toys now.
Yeah, I believe this one is actually from Greece.
Okay.
Yeah, I bought it from from that famous Greek seller that we used to buy a lot of stuff from on eBay. I can't think of his name right now. But
two South Africans and a Greek roll into a podcast. Boys, let's get into the media exposure of this look. Because it is quite alarming to me that for a character as popular as Snake Eyes, a central character of G.I. Joe and a popular seller at that, and the arrival of the Deke miniseries Operation Dragonfire in 1989... showcasing Rock and Roll V2, Stalker V2, all these 1999 figures. Yep, say no more. Scoop occupying a massive role in Operation Dragonfire. Nary a snake eyes to be seen. This look was completely ignored by the cartoon series. The only Snake Eyes look to then debut was his V4. In 1992, I mean, this is... Oh, no. This is the first... I think towards the end of the first season of Deke in 91, we had the 1991 Red Goggles Snake Eyes.
Yeah, so, I feel like this is the most underappreciated version, actually, of Snake Eyes. Like, even if I'm thinking to the comic books, and we haven't started talking about it now, but like I definitely remember version 4 being in the comics, obviously version 1 and 2, well, 2 being like, I mean, if you're a fan of 2, you're the happiest Snake Eyes fan in the world, because he's literally the version that's in everything all the time, always and forever. Version 3,
and let's not forget, so much. And let's not forget about like what I like to call version, I like to call it like 3.5. So it's kind of a mix of this guy and this guy. Yeah, so it's
Version 4 and version 3.
Yeah, it's kind of like version, it's like this version, but he's mostly in black, and he's kind of got
like, got the knives.
Like, it's got the knives and stuff. It's kind of, yeah, it's like the 3.5, the unreleased. We've never seen a toy of that ever. It's very much
crazy.
Something that lives only in the comic books.
It was in the introduction of that version, I think. Around about the Destro Must Die plot line in the comic books. And yes, he absolutely unveiled his V4 look, but it was more muted and had the knives across the chest. But yeah, that was a kind of a blink it, you miss it halfway figure. V3 1989 has an interesting appearance in its comic book lineage, because its appearance is actually kind of chronicled in the pages of the book. It wasn't just like, here's Snake Eyes rocking the new duds. He cobbles together his uniform from these three torturers, the Payne brothers, Crispo, Torquemond, and Desaad. And after dispatches, he doesn't have any clothes. He's basically in a loincloth. He's about to be tortured by them. And after dispatching them brutally, he takes various costume elements from them.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because it's like also kind of a little S and M-y.
I'm not a fan to be perfectly honest. But the fact that he's in the, sort of the bowels of the Cobra Consulate building and then goes on a one-man rampage through like reams and reams of Vipers, that kind of saves it a little bit for me, because you can see him attaching more tactical stuff to the uniform as the issue goes on. So he gets the mask off the Gimp, Crispo. He gets the pants, I think, or the pants and top and sort of gauntlets, braces. What would you call them? The bands that go around your...
Van Brace.
Greaves, maybe.
Anyway. No, Van Brace. Yeah, Van
Greebleys. Brace.
Okay.
Great. Gauntlet goes up to the elbow. Van Brace is on the is a bracelet.
Ah, yeah, very good. So there's silver bits of bling on his forearms. He gets those from Desaad, and then from Torquemada he takes the crossed knives, the butterfly knives, which is very convenient, because like trench knives were always part of Snake Eyes' mythology. It's always something that he had a bit of a fetish for. So it was very convenient that he is in the thrall of a baddie who wears a pair. Anyway, as I say, he goes through the issue and then cobbles together more and more kind of tactical gear from the various Vipers that he kills. Night Vipers, in fact. So I'd like to think that a good bit of his gear is just bog standard Cobra tactical vests and stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Something I want to mention about this specific Snake Eyes' design that you mentioned, especially with the knives across his chest. So these are butterfly knives, if you guys are not familiar with the term. It's actually the weapon of Wing Chun. Okay. There are a lot of, there's a belief, that the whole Wing Chun fighting system is actually designed around using those knives, the butterfly knives. And that the version that you see without them in hand is, just sort of a substitute to that. But anyway, it's a very Chinese weapon to have. And I don't know what it is about this Snake Eyes in particular, but I've always felt a kind of Chinese martial arts-ness from it. And it does have a lot to do with the gear. And I kind of, like, I'm kind of interested in this because stuff. Definitely. The Sanji gun.
Before we get any older, I have to stop you quickly, Paul, and just pause and say, I forgot to mention that it was the second part of the Snake Eyes trilogy where he debuts this look, issue 95, which was mid-December 1989. It seems G.I. Joe at that point was coming out twice monthly.
Yeah,
this was pretty awesome issue.
I suppose, yeah, Larry had to somehow get it into the comics. And it's like, so how do we get him out of his iconic outfit? You know, just, yes, he's somewhere where he doesn't have his normal outfit, so he kind of cobbles it together.
Unfortunately, he's surrounded by these guys who like BDSM and are all dressed in black.
So.
Are you in favor with this origin, Rob?
It's a weird origin. It's weird that the outfit has to have an origin. Instead of him kind of like just, you know, like switching things up and being like, you know, this is the new outfit I'm going to be wearing from now on. I feel like it's a little unnecessary that, that the outfit has an origin. It's like he just dress him in a new outfit. I think that's kind of cool. It's unnecessary. It could have turned out very differently if Baroness had stayed to continue to torture him. We could have come out with a very different looking Snake Eyes.
I see where you're going, Rob.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's black.
I love that that this look has an origin story. I don't particularly love the actual origin story itself. The things that I like is that I love that it's gear that he took from people who tortured him. I love that. That's very symbolic. I dig that. It's very
all
cinematic
that and sweaty ball juice.
but I mean, I'm just saying, like, it didn't necessarily have to be that. You know what I mean? Like, I just like there's a romantic side of that, a very vengeful side of that that I appreciate. But when I first read the story,
when I'm done with you,
when I first read this, I thought, oh, couldn't that have been like a ninja clan or like a bunch of like something that's
read it as late as me, Paul? Because I read this issue, I was in my late 20s. I was backstage.
Yeah, I was in my 20s when I read this.
Yeah, I was because it came in your. I only had 1 to 5 of the collected trade paperbacks.
Yes.
Those were put out by Marvel Comics. You continued on into the IDW reprints. So it was using your collection that I got to read into the 90s and read this particular issue. And I was like, what? My favorite Snake Eyes uniform has what origin?
Yeah,
these guys? Exactly. Yeah, it was a bit of a pearl, but I've come around on it a little bit since then. I think the most key media exposure for this look, however, has got to be the video game. Not so?
Hell yeah.
The 1991 Taxan video game. Oh, yes, What do you guys think of this?
I think...
I've seen it before.
Awesome game.
Have you now?
Oh, you've seen it before. Oh, my goodness.
Does anyone select anyone other than Snake Eyes as your secondary guy for any mission?
Obviously not. No, this is he's the man. You cannot choose anyone else.
Oh,
it's great that he got featured.
When I'm feeling adventurous, I might take Rock and Roll and Gridiron instead of Gridiron and Snake Eyes.
Level up Rock and Roll's gun. But yeah, guys, let's pour over those pixels. The knives, the sword, the grenades, it's all picked up beautifully. And here he is. Mini Snake Eyes. He's got an amazing jump in the game. Very lofty. I mean, you sail over enemies. Ah, yes. Rob, do you have any memories associated with this game?
I don't think so. I think I discovered it quite late. I think you introduced me to it. So I don't have much history with the game. I think I've probably seen you play it more than I've ever played it. it's just cool that he is featured in the game. Because, I mean, like, who else and came out in 1989? So. Gridiron?
Did you know that he doesn't use ammunition at all?
Yeah.
He does these kind of Hadoukens, which is cute and all, but, like, Snake Eyes' primary weapon is not the sword, it's the Uzi. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
He was a commando before he was ninja badassery. So it's a bit of a shame that he doesn't have, like, a weapon. But, hey, whatever.
Well, at least they got the look right. Agreed. Obviously Duke is just Duke. We have Gridiron. I mean, when did Gridiron come out? 1989 as well? Or was that 88?
1990.
1990, yeah. So they were rocking a couple of new characters. And it's cool that they did do that and not kind of like fall back on the older characters.
Ah, there it is. I needed to get a power up.
Oh,
he doubles up his Hadouken power. Once he power up his weapon, he can fire two blast. Fireballs.
But, it's a key blast. Ah.
I love this about him, actually. Because it makes him different from all the other characters in that respect. That he has
non-ammo. Grenade attack absolutely pwns.
Yeah. Yep, that's how you take out a jet
with grenades.
It's pretty impressive. But yeah, I think we've often talked about how accurate this game is, or at least it kind of has accurate models, towards the characters as well as the vehicles themselves. It's an absolute love letter to G.I. Joe, I think.
Well, I mean, this is made by... I mean, this is Texan. And then Texan...
Well, of course, Texan. I mean...
But Texan... No, but Texan had an interesting, like, video game history. But anyway, they were very big on trying to push the NES's boundaries. Like, and I think they did quite a lot with trying to get the look of this game right. Like, absolutely right where they could.
Mm.
It was a license thing, and I think they were trying to curry favor with future licensees to try and get other games, which they sadly never really did. But,
To
anyone watching this video presentation, just luxuriate over these pixels. It's the card art reproduced. He's not carrying his gun because obviously they wanted to kind of remove that from our collective consciousness. He's got his sword where the Uzi would be. He's got the trisectional staff in his left hand, and it's just beautiful. It's a lovely mix of blacks and purples and magentas and grays. Even a little tasty bit of baby blue for his visor.
Yeah.
Nice.
That might also be a pixel glitch.
Oh,
how dare you. Why would you ruin the, artistic...
No, it should be.
I want you guys
it
to look
be.
At that because I wanted to remind us all of the final Joe-Con in Chattanooga, Tennessee, 2018, where the Smeltzer brothers, might have been Matt, might have been Chad, I can never remember, produced this. What you're seeing on your screens, if you do have access to the video, is not pixels. It is the actual action figure painted up to resemble his pixelated form. So
that
high contrast
insane.
On the blade, light blue on the goggles, the various shades of purple, deep blue, black, magenta, hot pink.
I've seen some examples of this sort of like high contrast painting on figures before, and this is probably one of my favorites. I've seen some Gundams actually done up to look very cartoon,
cel-shaded.
Kind of cel-shaded.
No, anime.
It's wild. This effect is absolutely incredible, and it always looks fake to me, even though I know it's real.
The eyes play tricks on you. A flat surface that's kind of changed
it's
high contrast paint.
We've also seen NECA do a whole bunch of video game inspired paints of like Jason Voorhees and the Predator.
Yes,
from various
I do
video
remember
games.
Those.
So now we know how not to do it.
Yes, that is
also
true.
Disgusting.
they attempted something and failed.
No, the guy that. The guys that did those Joes for the comp, they did amazing work on those.
Mm.
They're really good. Yeah.
Shout outs to whichever twin brother actually produced it. Maybe they produced it together, in which case.
Maybe. They worked together.
You both.
Team effort, like G.I. Joe's meant to be.
It would just feel wrong to congratulate one without the other. Guys, I have a sort of almost existential question about your playtime with Snake Eyes.
Whoa.
When did you first learn that he was differently abled? That he was had war wounds and could no longer speak.
I'm actually not sure when that would have happened. I think probably it might have happened after meeting you. I mean, everything happens after meeting Stephen. But a sort of access to us was one or two comics you might have had. I think probably up to that point, he definitely was a speaker. And it does kind of change things, you know. I think you want to be more accurate to who he is. So I think we did do our best to kind of play him up as a mute. You know, he didn't speak very often.
It became a handicap for whoever was playing him, actually, because all of a sudden you had to find creative ways of communicating with the
rest of the team. But it was what you had to do because everyone wanted to be Snake Eyes. Paul, when do you think you discovered he wasn't?
I officially knew he can't speak or didn't speak or however it is when I was 8, because again, when I met David, remember David's quite a bit older than I am, so he had access and he had better access to things like the cartoon and whatever, so he knew that Snake Eyes couldn't speak, so that was information that was given to me. Interestingly enough, I never played
David Snake Eyes. Was your Stephen?
Yeah, to a degree, yeah. But I've never played Snake Eyes as a talking character, and the reason for that is because as an only child, when I used to play with my toys and stuff like that,
you know,
I didn't make them speak. Making them speak for me was very awkward. So everything was like internal monologues, internal dialogue. Oh, so Snake Eyes was very much in his own head all the time for me.
And so your only other playmate was David then?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, for that. I mean, there were friends and stuff in the schoolyard and whatever who had characters, but we never really played with G.I. Joes in school, if that makes sense. It was always
much like David, I was the kind of the keeper of the lore. And the lore was handed down to me from on high, courtesy of Larry Harmer, of course. my very first G.I. Joe comic book issue was a 1992 issue from 1992. It was issue 130, right? So that immediately should color your lenses as to like what my sense of history with G.I. Joe was. It was like very after the fact. The very next issue that I got, and this was given to me by my brother. I think he was commiserating. Well, he's going to give it to me anyways, like whether or not my rugby team won or lost. But like, I'm sure he handed it over with a sense of wicked glee, thinking, yeah, but you are definitely not a sportsman. It's a consolation prize. So yes, he had gotten that from, I think, Cape Town's only comic book store at the time and forever, Reader's Den. Now, the employer of Robert.
There was an Optimist in Cape Town.
There was, but it was never the easiest thing to find.
Yeah, ancient.
Like,
So the very next issue I got, because now that I knew that G.I. Joe was a printed comic book, I was on the lookout. Every time I was in a corner cafe, I check out the spinner rack, and lo and behold, issue 108 of G.I. Joe was the issue that greeted my little peepers. It is an issue that, if you're not familiar with the number, has Snake Eyes in his version 3 look with Cobra Commander in his arms. He's got him from behind. He's got his Uzi drawn. And in that issue, I think Snake Eyes, this exact event does transpire. Snake Eyes corners Cobra Commander in the Cobra Consulate wreckage. And Cobra Commander is pleading for his life. And he says, what am I asking this man for? He can't speak. You know, he has inside knowledge that Snake Eyes can't actually speak. So that tipped me off to the fact that this figure, this character, this enigma that occupied my playtimes is an enigma because he cannot speak, cannot express himself like the rest of us. And from that day forwards, I lorded it over you guys. Rob, L, Justin and Wesley, Lyle, anyone who was playing G.I. Joe.
You want to play the guy, can't talk.
If you want to play with Snake Eyes, no more speaking for you.
Don't do it.
David and I went it was a function. My parents and his parents, they schlepped us off to some kind of, I don't want to call it a resort. It's more like a hiking space. And they went to go and do like a lunch. And then David and I set off into the bush. go and, like, you know, have these adventures. And Dave was always, like, because he's older and he was always Snake Eyes, that was always how it went down. Now he's always Storm Shadow. But even in those games, we didn't speak to each other. We used hand signals and stuff like that, yeah.
Oh, that is super cool.
Wild.
That would have been a crazy lot of bullshit I had to endure with Rob and Alistair, because Rob was constantly cracking jokes and making light.
Always cracking up. That's why I never chose Snake Eyes, because I was like, I can't go 2 minutes without a joke.
Here's the panel. So Snake Eyes has the knives to Cobra Commander's throat and says, and Cobra Commander says, "Oh, what do you want? What am I saying? The madman is mute."
And then Snake we get a cool little panel.
Snake Eyes has a speech bubble. It has
dot, dot, dots.
And it lives this plus two extra dots and then exclamation point.
Yeah. How do you act that? How do you act that? Is that like...
a little extra.
And remember, you got no
face. This issue also had this had the beginning of the G.I. Joe dossiers in the backs of the Marvel comics.
And they kicked it off with Snake Eyes
and Cobra Commander.
Wild.
Oh, and Snake Eyes illustrated by Andy Kubert.
Yay!
Currently cover artist on G.I. Joe Real American Hero.
Gorgeous interpretation of the version 3. It's very, very
definitely
good.
I love it. It's time to shine in the comic books. And it obviously had the video game. But that's it, guys.
Yeah. No movies, no cartoon. It's just like, well, I mean, also, because I mean, the thing with the cartoon as well is he was never featured that much in it anyway. So, I mean, if a new version of him came around, it would just be like, okay. We don't really
but
feel
his
like
popularity was pretty assured.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And he had a figure out that year. So it is, and, you know, as I mentioned earlier, like they didn't shy away from featuring 1989 toys. Alley Viper, Stalker, Scoop, the Slaughter's Marauders figure line.
Rock but I think the cartoon's history with Snake Eyes would kind of like preclude him from being featured, because he wasn't featured at all up to that point. So even if there was a new version of him, they were not going to, it wasn't going to be a character that they were going to, you know.
Like, and also the dialogue on Deke was not really the strongest. It was kind of too verbose, too wordy, too over-explained.
Yeah, no. A Snake Eyes in Deke would be a terrible version. You know, like, can you imagine what he would say in Deke?
In Dragonfire.
They would characterize him.
He'd be quiet, but like...
But like, it would be obnoxiously quiet. Like, it would be like...
obnoxiously quiet, yeah. Snake Eyes. It'll always be like some loud sound effect. Like, you'll do like a karate chop. Or something
so
ridiculous.
Do we feel this is the Snake Eyes that has the coolest selection of equipment? Like, he comes with so much stuff. Mm. Like, you know, like previous versions had like a wolf and a sword and a little gun. But like, this is the one that kind of feels even more so, I think, than version 4 is even more ninja-y, you know? Like, he just comes with the best stuff. I mean, I think my backpack is unfortunately not the original. Because the little pins on the side.
Oh, wait. Yes.
Is it? No, it isn't the original.
Your original broke.
So my original broke because you have a little thing on the side that kind of like holds the sword, the very cool sword, which is now to me the most iconic version of Snake Eyes' sword, with the kind of like holes in it and the pommel at the back.
Sort of kind of like dragon hooking. Claw.
Like a dragon claw, yeah. And that fits beautifully
it's
in the
Chinese.
Side. In the
is
side
it though,
of the backpack.
Is there not something medieval about that?
There is something medieval about it, but there's
medieval
something...
Europe. I should say.
Yeah, because, no, I mean, it's a straight sword. Although, I mean, Chinese more so than obviously Japanese, they do use straight swords. It is a big part of, double-edged straight swords.
Shin.
I like that, Paul. That explanation makes a lot of sense, that it would be more Chinese in origin.
And it also goes in
for
with
a guy who was
four.
Educated by the Urashikage in Japan, he's tended to stray away from having katanas, at least in action figure form.
Yeah, ironically.
It could also be, I mean, he was trained more to be a ninja than to be wielding katana. Although I imagine ninjas would have wielded a katana anyway.
Let me qualify my statement. Sorry. One. His first two appearances in action figure form with swords were not with katanas.
Yeah.
He then kind of course corrected, I suppose, as the lore caught up. But it just tells you that, like, the designers weren't necessarily interested in staying in step with the developments in the comic books. They wanted to just design something that was cool, not necessarily something that was cool looking, suggestive. And by giving him something different, it would help to disassociate him from the ninja, Storm Shadow.
Yeah. That's actually something I want to jump in with on Snake Eyes. Like, so he's version 2 uses the Falchion, but that Falchion is very similar to Chinese Dao. And then we move on to this version, and he's got the trisectional staff, he's got the Jin, the straight sword, and he's got the butterfly knives on his chest. And I think that, and he's American, he's a white guy. So I think the designers were trying to go for a kind of a kung fu aesthetic and still get, and then still pay off on the ninja aesthetic, because kung fu was very popular in the 80s in terms of like,
late 80s. I mean, we have American Ninja. I mean, tons of like very cool Hong Kong movies, I suppose, coming over to the States, influencing the way that they make their kind of more kung fu based martial arts movies.
Exactly that. And then even later on in the Ninja Force line, when they released Snake Eyes again, most of his weapons are actually Chinese weapons. Like, he's got like a dadao, like a giant Chinese well, it's a sword, like, but there's a better way. It's more like a machete.
I know what you're it's like a scimitar almost. It's very broad.
Yes.
Blade.
Yeah, there's that one. Yeah, so there's that Jin. There's the big one that he comes with as well. It's crazy, man. And then like, but even
those
the
are weapons,
dots,
tree
like,
weapons, and I don't think there's as much intention behind them as the earlier versions.
Not... But definitely whoever was designing it was very much influenced by more by Chinese weapons than Japanese.
Definitely.
Exactly. It can't be an accident. The cutouts on his sword and on his chest knives. I was looking at a Reddit thread trying to explain why you would have cutouts in a sword, because it will lower the structural strength of the steel, making it easier to break. It really is just, I mean, apart from it being like a aesthetic thing, like it looks
makes
cool.
Makes it lighter.
Makes it lighter, yeah.
Yeah, so he can swing that thing much faster than his
opponent. Changes the center of gravity, perhaps. More weighted.
What's cool about
normal, less
something
blame.
That something that those weapons have always communicated to me as somebody who is training is that those weapons are not meant to be for repeat use. It's not like he's going to, like, the idea of that sword is that you would use it once or twice to kill with, and maybe on the third strike or whatever it'll actually break, or fourth strike or whatever. Or it's enough to defend yourself.
Which is a pity, because
struck,
like,
and you can,
it's more complex to make a blade that has holes. So it's
more effort for less use.
Making these throwaway blades.
Not very smart.
The sexiness of the blades that comes with the Snake Eyes in particular, and holes in blades. The sexiness is always that it's this well-designed thing. But the reality is that actually a lot of the times those holes were kind of drilled in or hammered in. Or something like more like that, so it'd actually look quite ugly. It wouldn't be as pretty as like what Snake Eyes has got there. So just a like a kind of a thought there. I mean,
well, it's a butterfly knife aesthetic choice, and the fact that it's picked up on the chest knives and the sword, like there's a kind of a synergy between figure sculpt and accessories, which I'm always a fan of.
Yeah, that's great. It comes, it's a full design. And guys, I feel like the one figure that we're not mentioning, the one year, is the modern era version of this guy. And I feel like it, and I'm so sorry that I don't have mine here with me. It lives in my parents' place. But guys, that toy is absolute gold. Like, I think that's one of the best modern era figures ever released. I'm so glad
it's a good
that
reinterpretation.
Modern era, totally. I'm
it
so glad
does,
that figure exists.
I'm convinced that figure, the designers of that figure had access to original production notes for the V3 Snake Eyes because they took certain design elements from that Snake Eyes and were able to complete them in the design, the sort of original designer's intent, perhaps, that the technology wasn't able to reproduce. The fact that the knives on the chest are removable is one example. That's the most obvious.
That is a big improvement. I mean, it's so cool to be able to play with those.
But they do fall off too easily, so the technology still wasn't up to snuff. He has an earpiece on the right side of his helmet, or his mask, I should say. That became a swivel for night vision goggles on the 25th anniversary. And the final and most intriguing improvement to me is they take the sculpt. It's difficult to see, but he definitely has a sculpted strap that runs over his right shoulder. On the 25th anniversary version, they added a loop there, which allows you to attach, hook the Uzi.
Yes, onto that.
This kind of carry point, a sling, basically.
Which makes more sense than where I always attach it, which is basically to the sword.
You nutter. Why does it have literally, a hook? Why does the Uzi have a hook?
If I can't attach it anyway, of course I'm going to attach it to the end of the sword.
Being practical, so kind of, I do like that.
Hangs off there, which was, you know, which is what I've basically always done with it. It's like if he's not holding it, you know, he has to put it somewhere. And there's no way else.
How many
it.
Times I denied you being able to play with this action figure because I never saw you do that.
Well, it's something I've
in my own time.
I do like the Uzi. It does have all of the furniture for the most
part. It's good, and it's not oversized as well, I feel. You know, it actually feels like it's to scale. You know, I mean, if you look
used
at
the original,
you know, this gun,
1985 Uzi, it does seem more mongrel. But when I say it has the same furniture, it still has the same, like, foregrip, and it has the same iron sights. So it does have, like, some of the signifiers of an Uzi.
Yeah. But and it feels better scale than, say, many of the pistols that G.I. Joe's can't come with. I mean, the pistols feel like they're exactly the same size as this, but this is much better scaled. And it's so detailed. I think a lot of his equipment is very, very detailed. I mean, the backpack has tons of little extras on it. The gun itself is very well detailed.
I like the fact that it seems like Snake Eyes has taken what has always been his go-to, which is a factory standard Uzi submachine gun, and he's now gone to work on it, added a lot more customizations, and now this is a very signature gun with a hook.
I have the weirdest love-hate relationship with this specific Uzi. It's so cool that it hooks on. It does look really good, but I really hate the grip. And although I appreciate the detail, like having the trigger guard, I hate that it makes it hard to put the gun on the figure's hand and make it look cool. Like, it's always got that off-kilter look, you know, to it.
It does kind of. Well, maybe that's just mine, but he kind of does. It does kind of like go forward in his hand. He kind of like holds it.
Yeah, it always looks like he has to hold it like this. It's always like, you know, it's always like this. Yeah, it's weird. I've never really appreciated that about this gun, and I'm pretty sure that I popped a thumb or something with that before. But anyway, it's a sin that. It's something that they didn't fix on the modern era figure, which to me sort of communicates that it was never actually a problem for anybody else, that it was just my issue.
I think it was just your issue.
Definitely.
But of course, the only big problem of the modern era version.
If the modern era version is left, it gets better.
Yeah, it works. It works out. I think the only thing they didn't improve in the modern era version is the sword. It doesn't have the holes in it, has the impressions of the holes, and they also kind of like so instead of having it be like a classic, like, you know, King Arthur sword, it kind of has like a little like zoop at the end, kind of like cuts. So I think that's the only
thing. It looks
thing
like
that
it's designed
improved.
To be a single blade as opposed to double bladed.
Yes. And then it has like the impressions of the holes, but it's not cut through. So I think that's literally the only thing I can think of, at least on the modern era version, that's not a improvement. But then you can ignore that sword.
The backpack is the logical place to put the sword. I have seen it online. Some people jamming the trisectional staff or hooking. I think 3D Joes, in fact, have each individuated section of the staff like hooked over.
Interesting.
One.
That's what I do.
Hangs.
I never thought to do that.
But considering the backpack itself, it's nicely low profile. Like, you don't see.
Yeah,
it
it's not like a huge thing. It's nice, thin. Book pack. Mm-hmm.
He has two Tekikaga. Is that what they're called? The claws?
Yeah, the claws, the metal claws, yeah.
So you can climb better.
He has shuriken, three of them.
Mm-hmm.
He has a bedroll. He has rope. And what else does
he have? Ninjas need rope.
He has an absolute shit ton of darts.
Yes!
Yes. So not only does he have a silenced pistol, I mean gun, but he has a blowgun, which is fascinating because the blowgun, at least, you know, I mean, through the history that I've kind of like researched about it, it's generally used actually for hunting. And it does occur in multiple primitive cultures throughout the history of the world. And would usually just be used for hunting. And it would usually just be a pipe with no actual extra little bits and stuff added onto them. Specifically, the Japanese, they have their own blowgun, which they called the Fukia. And it was often considered to be a ninja weapon because obviously of the silence of it. They're generally short range. The darts they fire, the Japanese call them Fukibari, which I thought was a cool word. I think it's kind of cool. And although it is actually illegal in a lot of countries in the world, blowguns themselves, they're considered to be illegal, including the UK, Ireland, in some states in America. In the modern setting of our world, there are actually competition blowguns used. So they're actually, it's considered to be a sport these days. And you will find some of them that are kind of modified to have like a grip on it. So it's more almost like a rifle, so it's easier to hold. But yeah, at least from what I've seen, I did not see a single one that had kind of a scope on it, like
sights on it.
Has on it, which is
what kind
weird.
Of ranges are we talking about? You say close range.
Well, short range versions? So it wouldn't be the same as like a rifle. You won't be able to fire it like 300-400 meters. You're probably gonna get to about 100 meters or less.
But we're talking about it's very absolutely silent here. Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah, because obviously it's just your breath, which is pushing this, you know, pushing the dart out. So it's even more silent. I mean, obviously, you know, we think that guns are silent when you put a silencer on them. But I mean, this is definitely the silent weapon. So, I mean, not close range, you know, it's like standing in front of you, but definitely you can be at a distance on a rooftop and take out a guy maybe on, you know, like a floor below you. So it very much is an infiltration weapon.
Intended to be poisoned.
I think a lot of, especially South American tribes, they did poison their darts to make it easier to capture their whatever they were hunting, which would make it much easier because you could hit it, and then even if you didn't drop it in that moment, you know, you can still track it and you get it. So, I mean, more likely than not, they probably would be poisoned or at least coated in something that would render whoever he's hit with this with the dart.
I'm thinking, you know, practically, like, it's not a kind of a one-shot kill. Like, how lethal can a dart be?
Yeah, for sure. Which is why, I mean, well Paul has some ideas.
Your lethal spitter.
Ooh.
There are poisons that can kill you in seconds, and they exist in the Amazon. And these tribes are actually known to have used the darts made with poison from some of these creatures and some of these animals. There's certain insects, there's certain fish that just have poison. Frogs, there we go. Well, the poison arrow frog is a super famous one for that. But yeah, you can die within actual seconds. Like,
yeah.
Just have to hit
and
a main
vein,
bro.
See the use. I mean, obviously, I mean, modern darts, I mean, obviously would be more kind of like bigger. They kind of have like a little thing at the back that makes it easier to shoot them. And they'd have an internal space to a degree that would be able to deliver whatever kind of like liquid you're trying to use on your enemies. I mean, famously, I mean, there's the dart gun in almost every single Metal Gear game since Metal Gear Solid. No. Well, yeah, Metal Gear Solid used a dart. I mean, at least I think it has a dart.
You got a trank gun.
Yeah. Snake, hold my beer. I'm going to use a blowgun. I mean, come on. I'm trying to practically think of how I would have used this had I known about it, what I know now. It's probably like an insult weapon. I'm gonna sneak close enough to you to put a dart in you. It's not gonna kill you,
but not so it's close. Though,
tell
I'm
you,
like, knock you out.
I could have taken that shot any day of the week, Baroness, and you'd be 6 feet under. So don't fuck with my girl anymore.
But it's definitely one of the part of his kit that I did play with the least. I think I might have got some
use out of it. It's funny.
It's
the part of his kit that I retained from my Snake Eyes. So, in actual fact, I think you have my dart gun.
There it is.
It's heritage.
The original guard.
I didn't have the Uzi. I lost the Uzi. I lost the figure.
Yeah, I had the Uzi.
But I did keep the dart gun. So, I think this gun saw action primarily as a silenced pistol.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough.
I imagine that's what happened.
There's enough there forward to seeing like a pistol.
You can get him from
a distance. Scope. He's got a pistol grip, really long barrel. But anyone who saw Batman 89 knows
how lethal
a really long barrel can be. Knock that bat plane right out of the sky. Batwing.
So, like, on that whole thing, like, those dart guns, are the professional dart guns aren't actually huge. They're like half a meter, I think.
Yeah, they're fairly small.
I'm pretty sure if you guys think back to it, you would have seen some here in South Africa, because I knew people that had stuff like that. And the darts had like a little feathery bit at the end.
A little feathery thing.
So like, I mean, that's, and they used to do stuff like that. They used to do blow dart shooting. I remember it being a thing.
It's a competitive thing. And I mean, lots of countries do have their own teams. I mean, it is a sport for a lot of countries.
I think it's
competitive blow piping.
I think it's a really cool weapon, and I can actually think of tons of ways to make it work. I'm just surprised that it's included with the guy that has no mouth.
We could just lift the mask up, you know. Yeah, well, they should have included it with the movie version of Snake Eyes.
Yeah, I think this mask, is a weapon.
If it's a permeable enough mask, I mean, the guy has to be able to breathe. So the fabric of his mask must
could
be
actually
like Gore-Tex or something really breathable. So I think it wouldn't make too much of a difference, to be honest.
Tuck it
up against. I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact that V2, 1985, has lips. They're sculpted. Yeah. Check it out.
And also the way that it's designed as well. I mean, the actual part that you're putting your lips on is kind of like expanded. So he wouldn't be like sucking on the tube itself. He'd be pressing his lips up against it and then applying the pressure from there. So it is possible like he could do it without lifting up. Yeah. You know.
Like some people say it's awkward to get him to pose with it. I've managed some pretty convincing blowgun poses.
You know, if your figure's old enough and kind of, you know.
Do you have to get him on his knees first?
Ooh.
Another thing that people have complained that might be a bit awkward is his three sectional staff.
Ah, Sanji gun. Yeah.
Awkward but awesome. Whoa, oh, nice. Steven's crazy good at that. My goodness. Steven's
showing you just have to ignore the pistol grip. The pistol grip is erroneous. It didn't exist.
Blowing skills.
I think they had to put a pistol grip on that because it looked like that sort of sports blowgun thing. And I think they also did it because they were worried maybe kids would think it was like some kind of weird sword.
Yeah, and you would now lose
they just
it.
Think it's some kind of weird long gun.
Yeah. The tricycle is so cool. I'm so glad.
We were moving the agenda on to
this bad boy over here.
The most magnetic G.I. Joe accessory I have owned. You could just put it between your thumb and your forefinger and just roll it around.
Flick. It's the original fidget spinner. For those listening, Paul is sharing an incredible shot he's taken of Snake Eyes in a beautiful, darkened environment. There's some beautiful blue and orange light on him, and he is wielding his trisectional staff.
Yay. So, yeah, it's mid-spin.
Is that the correct term for it, Paul?
Well, trisectional, yes. Yeah. It's a mouthful. I'll give you that. But the actual name, the Mandarin name, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, and I am going to say gun in a way that's going to sound like a swear word in Cantonese. But anyway, it's Sanji gun or Sanji gun, I think is more the correct term, because the staff is just gun or gun. I think it is.
And then
Shanji, we just call it a staff in my school. The whole purpose of a trisectional staff, the concept behind it is that it's meant to be a close range weapon, a mid range weapon, and a long range weapon. So I've got some images sort of demonstrating that a little bit. So here is using it like as a staff. So you're spinning the staff around and you turn it, using it as if it's a staff with the normal spin. Then
holding
one and catch
central
and
section.
Yeah, so holding the central section. Then here is you can hold two links. You can use the end as a flail. I've got the flail at the end of the on the other side of his elbow, but you would
so
use it as
whipping
a flail.
It forward like Castlevania.
Yes. Kind of thing. Yeah. So here you can like smash somebody with it. And then the other way, the other approach, which is often, if you guys, you can even look this up on the internet, if you watch trisectional stuff, Kung Fu forms, is the practitioner will actually hold two of the ends in these hands as if they were weapon batons. So you would kind of
strike.
Yeah, kind of, but that kind of thing. But yes, it's exactly that. Because when you strike, then you can actually take it out and bring it around. And yeah. Anyway, it's actually a very, very practical weapon, if you think about it. It's a very difficult weapon to master, though.
I can imagine. Like, I mean, if nunchucks, I mean, that's just two things connected. Those look freaking insane to like learn how to use. My uncle actually used to practice a lot with those, and like the number of times that he smacked himself with them was just.
Yeah, exactly. This weapon, my sifu refers to this weapon as a teenager, because it doesn't always do what you would like it to do. It does what it wants to do, and it causes you pain. So the thing with the Sanji gun is it's exactly that. It's traumatic to practice. I mean, I've made one. I've made a one out of plastic tube and foam, so that when I do smash myself in the head, I'm not succumbing myself to brain damage. But yeah, man, the thing, the amount of times I've just smashed myself just in the face with one of the ends, it's insane. I mean, if anything, if you don't master this weapon, I'll tell you this much. You will be able to take a punch. Yeah. Like, you'll be able to take a lot of punches before you even notice that you're being punched.
So, because I mean, you're learning a lot when you're practicing this thing. You know, you're learning the weapon, you're learning more about yourself.
You're just hurting yourself in the worst way. But it's a cool weapon. It's a really, really cool weapon. And I know that there's still a lot of Kung Fu schools today that practice it. I think it's a competition weapon now as well. In terms of like wushu competition, I think it's a federation weapon now. I'm not 100% sure, but like, I have never learned it. I've only got a practice one that I've messed around with. In our system, Sifu might, I think he looks at me and he goes, "You're not going to use a trisectional staff until I handle a staff properly." So, yeah. So I don't know if I'll ever learn how to use this.
It's
weapon.
So cool that the version of Snake Eyes that we got came with some of the most unique weapons. I mean, I think across the entire G.I. Joe line, but also for him himself. You know, he came with his generic kit, as it were, a sword, a backpack, and his awesome little Uzi. But he came with extra stuff. You know, they kind of made him very special compared to other versions that have come, I think, before and after.
Absolutely.
You know, it worked on him so well.
Play pattern as a child, I think, far more than, and I'm going to step on hallowed ground here, hot take maybe, but like, I never really got much out of an included pet. Like, maybe it was because they were just molded slugs, you know, farm animals.
Yeah, it was like a
basically pose, they had no articulation. There wasn't much character to them. They felt like cheap outs. I didn't enjoy the idea of a pet on the battlefield. Like, how stressful to worry about your four-legged or two-winged friend when you're supposed to be concentrating on your job. I've learned, I guess, since then what combat dogs do and how important they are. But, like, this wasn't a dog. This was a wolf. So I would gladly have traded Timber for more weapon options.
Yeah.
With Snake Eyes, you got an arsenal on a blister pack.
Hell yeah. Well, wait until the 90s, Stephen, and you're going to get an entire tree of weapons.
Tree.
How happy are you going to be?
I'm currently showing off a prized possession of my collection. This was gifted to me by Mauler Joe, and it is a carded 1989 Snake Eyes. To make up for beautiful, the one man. I lost that fateful Christmas day, Mauler came to my rescue. It is a wonderful thing to have. Lovely opportunity to perhaps regard the card art. And the fact that it cheats various places, I mean, it puts the sword on the back of his thigh. You can't actually put the sword back there. There's nothing to hold it. And the blowgun is kind of on his back, just stuck somehow. Wedged
but,
in there.
But how?
It's a cheat, I tell you. But their hearts were in the right place, bless them, because it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of artwork. And it's lovely to have. It's a lovely object in my collection. I'm not a carded collector, but this one holds a special place for me. Guys, we can't really regard the plastic of this action figure without talking a little bit about what came before and what came afterwards. On screen right now, I have a lineup of version 1.5 Snake Eyes from 1983, version 2 from 1985, version 3 from 1989, version 4 from 1991, and version 5 from 1993, I'm going to say. Ninja Force.
Yeah.
Terrible shoulders, terrible waist, terrible legs. Anyway.
Cool design, though.
So, 1989 is absolutely the, 1989 is absolutely the middle child of this lineup. And you can see some interesting changes in Snake Eyes' like physique, in fact. I mean, 83 was absolutely just a cookie cutter. All the Joes had the same build because they shared the same parts, practically. 85, I started realizing like 85 was absolutely a fetishist approach to Snake Eyes. Not only did he have this wicked way out like medieval knight's visor, but he had the latex lips. You can see his collarbone and his clavicle. I mean, his traps.
He's very much the male Baroness in that version. Like
very superhero. His
outfit is very superhero, tight.
Absolutely. And and skin tight, form fitting. Bit of a muffin top though, if I'm honest. He gets far more slim and trim in 89, where they like cinch him in with this kind of, it's like a nicely quilted, or it's a very textured look. Like what he's wearing underneath the knives.
Well detailed.
Is some kind of combat carry fabric.
Yeah, you can see it better from the back.
Yes, absolutely.
Dude, the cross that strap. Texture is beautiful.
And that texture is like present on 1991's entry and, in fact, on 1993's entry. It's underneath this kind of like, I don't know,
everything.
Pectoral armor. He's got like smooth armor portions.
Yeah.
But underneath all that is this kind of quilted look. So that was a new bit of Snake Eyes furniture that started in 1989. And I'm here for it. I like the fact that he's wearing boots in 89.
Boots are awesome. Yeah, they're like nice big boots.
Snake, it's like the pendulum has swung the other way from the 1985 version, which, as you said, Paul, very superhero. And as I say, very gimp, you know. You can see that his back muscles on 1985. By 1989, he's wearing a lot more like combat stuff, like straps.
It's almost like grenades. A combination of the first two, where it's kind of like more felt, but it's less as felt as the second version. But he kind of has more mercenary kind of combat stuff, like the first version, you know, where he has kind of like extras and stuff on there. But then he also incorporates where the direction of the character was going, you know, into kind of like a more ninja-y look. It's actually kind of crazy that the more ninja-y guys, I mean, yeah, they don't look as ninja-y, I think, as version 3 does, you know, because he does look
during the 90s. Well, look, if you consider what Snake Eyes in the 90s was sharing peg space with, his 90s versions are actually still pretty toned down, all things considered.
Well, I mean, look at number four. His fucking biceps are like huge.
Yeah, look. Let's take those two off the table momentarily. And I will say that.
Oh, for sure. Let's ignore those.
1989 Snake Eyes has the smallest head and is shorter, a little bit shorter than his 1985 version.
Yeah.
Would you believe?
Yeah, he's got great proportions, actually.
Yeah, I think so. He probably is the best proportioned of the five original versions of Snake Eyes. I would say.
I have a slight issue with the burly arms of the 92 version. It's not like the end of the world. I just have a little bit of an issue with it. I know why they did it. It's just to match the size of the chest and everything. And that was the time to do that kind of thing, was to have
you mean the 1991 version?
Yeah, sorry. I call it 92 because I got mine in 92.
That's when we got it.
True. So, but it's 91. Yeah, it is the 91 version. And also just the 91 version, I know, and I really hope we do one of these for the 91 version as well. But this figure is like, that toy in particular is quite hated amongst the Joe community. And I think the neon weapons have a lot to do with it. But figure the what's that line? They've just done a Fig Zero. They've just done the Fig Zero unveil of this figure, which is another premium quality 1-12 scale figure, and it looks pretty amazing. And I think that's good justification for this actual design. And I think maybe guys are looking at the original with new eyes again, because it is a good design. But we'll get to that. We'll have that podcast in the future.
We will have that podcast.
I just want my classified version. Yeah. You hope?
Go for it. No, I hope that, I mean, that this, I mean, brings a lot of light to this version. I think he is one of the cooler. They're all cool. But I think he is probably the most underappreciated. But the also, he's not as hated as, say, version 4 is. I think 4 is easily, it's easy to hate him, you know, as, you know, like compared to versions cool shot, that man. Came before. And I think he's definitely one that kind of goes under a lot of people's radar, this version of Snake Eyes.
Love that shot, Rob.
He's very cool. And I hope people come to appreciate him after listening and or watching this episode.
Wait, is that Rob's shot or your shot, Steve?
And that was all.
Those are all my shots. My
yeah, those are awesome, man. Yeah,
short boxes.
I love all my boxes. Yeah.
Well, short boxes. I'll share it again.
Short, long boxes. Please show them properly. Yeah, I love that, man. Long that Night Viper's gonna get it, bro.
Snake Eyes is doing that Spider-Man thing basically between two walls, and he's got his Uzi pointed down at a unsuspecting Night Viper below. Classic adversaries, as it turns out.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, and also, I mean, obviously I took these pictures at night. definitely. No editing going on here.
Not a grade at all.
Guys,
never.
As we close the chapter on Snake Eyes 1989, is it fair to rate him, compare him to his fellow Snake Eyes iterations?
Whoa.
I think they all get 5 stars.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I think they all get 5 stars except for the Ninja Force version.
Whoa, gets 6. All right.
The man to beat is always 1985. And I think the argument that I'm starting to make nowadays more than anything else is I don't have to pick a clear winner because I don't have to choose. Each one of these Snake Eyes versions occupies their own place in history. Like if you have the OG 13 green team, it only feels right to use swivel arm or straight arm Snake Eyes.
Mm.
Yeah.
If you're leaning into like peak Sunbow animation years, with Flint and Lady J and Shipwreck, it only feels right to use Visor 1985.
Yeah, or if you love the movies, Rise of Cobra, of course you're going to gravitate to this version.
Look, all I'm saying is if you are a bit late to the party, as G.I. Joe Berg was classically in our youth, 1989 Snake Eyes was the one you wanted. He's the one that played with that era of Joe's. The Benelux catalog era. There's a lot of cool material in existence, short of an actual good cartoon series, where this would be your go-to Snake Eyes above all others. So he has his place, and my goodness, does he come with a fabulous amount of weaponry. So he's a winner in my book, 5 out of 5, all the way.
Of course.
Oh, definitely. I also love putting that Snake Eyes up against this version of the Ninja Force as well, like all of the colorful Cobra ninjas. I feel like our version of Snake Eyes works very well against
every
them.
Every Snake Eyes aesthetic. Is only as good as the counterpart.
Yeah.
Like V1.5 or V1 has version 1 of Storm Shatter to fight, as does 85. So they kind of, they share. They share Cobra Storm Shatter.
Yeah.
If you flip forward to the Ninja Force era, the later, the 90s Snake Eyes' share Ninja Force Storm Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
But
1989
Snake Eyes and 1988 Storm Shadow are a two-stream
team, bro.
Yeah. There's no sharing. They are each other's opposite number. or complementary number.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because of where we were
in an ung, my dude. In an ung.
The Joker can only be as cool as Batman he faces, or vice versa. Should have phrased it the other way. No. Batman's only ever as good as his Joker.
Although I would love a deluxe version of this figure. Like, I would love a premium. Like, if Mezco did a version of this that was really faithful, had a great proportion, they didn't try to mess with it too much, or didn't try to make it cool or something, I'd probably go for that.
The orange goggle snake eyes.
Yes, they are. Yeah, that's the one coming from. Yeah, exactly. So there's the.
It might happen. I mean, if they're willing to make that version, there's no way they're not going to make the 1989 version. They have to.
Yeah. And I'm still on. I'm on the fence about that Fig Zero version. Hey, I'm thinking about it. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it is. It's 3-0.
It's an easy calculation. It's an easy calculation for Steve and I. If it's not 3¾-inch, don't want it. Nope.
Hey man, nope. I'm pretty convinced I have all the snake eyes I'll ever need.
Yeah, you got fucking 5 of them, my dude.
Plastic willing. I do have a 1983 snake eyes. Who knows? You might just turn to glass and shatter one day. But, dear listener, dear viewer, do you have memories associated with 1989 Snake Eyes? Do you believe that this is an underrated figure? Do you believe that it should be in more conversations? Or is this something that
should it be really elevated? Yeah.
Do it for you? Let us know. Drop down in the comment section and write us a love letter.
Or drop us a mail at realsouthafricanhero@gmail.com. If you don't want to go on YouTube, just
blow us a message.
As always, we salute our Patreon subscribers, members, patrons, those guys.
Our patrons.
They are
absolute
awesome
ninjas. Yeah.
Yes.
If you've already got this shirt and other shirts like it, and you want something a little different, like Rob's very cool G.I. Joe Burke shirt, then go and check out our merch store.
Teespring store.
Yeah. Yeah. G.I. Joe inspired.
Yes.
This is definitely.
See the
not
continued battles between G.I. Joburg and the Snake Force.
Ooh. And in episode 321, we'll be coming at you live to talk about, amongst other things, Duke issue number 4 from Skybound. So stick around for that.
Dun, dun, dun.
So excited. Like, I where we ended last time was crazy. Baroness standing over him like, yeah, we're going to help each other now. What's going to happen next?
Bang, bang, bang.
Bang, bang, bang.
I thought we were going to watch suspicious movies together.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yo, Joe.
Holbrook. And let's get a shot of...